Welcome to the Manuscript Academy podcast,
brought to you by
a writer
and an agent
who both believe that education is key.
The beauty is the people you meet along the way,
and that community makes all the difference.
Here at the Manuscript Academy, you can learn the skills, make the connections, and have access to experts all from home.
I'm Julie Kingsley.
And I'm Jessica Zinsheimer.
Put down your pens, pause your word counts, and enjoy.
All right, friends, we have a super exciting episode today. You may remember Julia Alexandra from a couple episodes ago. We were doing her versions of Query, Good, Better, and Best. And it turns out Best Query got her an agent. Julia, congratulations.
Thank you so much. I'm just so excited. And I really know that that query got so much better over time. And it was definitely a big part of getting my agent.
And Ellen, please tell us about you and what you're looking for. And yeah, you and your life as an agent.
Yeah, I'm Ellen. I work at HG Literary in New York City. So we're a medium-sized agency and we do a little bit of everything. I specialize in children's books, although I do a little adult too. And I also am the manager of our foreign rights list for children's literature at the agency too. So in terms of children's lit though, I look for a little bit of everything, picture books, middle grade, YA, YA crossover into adults as well. And obviously I'm a fan of fantasy like Julia's manuscript, but I do contemporary as well. And all of my books have a little bit of, you know, humor, heart, a little bit of romance in them. And I love a good speculative kind of twist to something. So
is there anything you're especially looking for this year?
That's a good question. I'm always looking for author illustrators on the younger end of things. And then I'm always looking for a really good Southern set story because I am from Kentucky. So I'm always looking for that kind of Southern, you know, something that gets it just right.
Nice. So, Ellen, why don't you tell us your first impressions of Julia's query and some things you look for in queries?
Yeah, I mean, a great thing about a good query is the concept will hook you immediately. And some agents look for more literary kind of focused works, but I always love something that has a clear kind of hook. And then you get into the excellent writing and the prose. So I have to kind of have that really fun hook at the start to then read the pages. And so Julia's query had that. It was very clear and concise. And so the concept was very high concept, but she led the query with the main character, which is important, I think. So I immediately knew who our protagonist was and what her goals were. Whereas sometimes queries can begin with a lot of plot and exposition and, you know, larger world building before we get to know the character. Whereas I always like to see that character pop in and, you know, early on in that first paragraph. And so Julia did that really well. I had a really good sense of who I was going to be rooting for. And also I'm a sucker for ocean set stories or just stories around the ocean. And so I think, you know, the fact that hers is set on a cruise ship was very early on in the query. And it's also one of the things that makes the book itself stand out. That was one of the unique elements. And so the fact that Julia highlighted it very early on and didn't save all the good stuff for the very end of the query was definitely a big plus.
Oh, yay, Julia.
I know. I love this so much. Julia, let's go back, right? So in the last podcast, we talked about how this has been a journey and everything else. So did you have a sixth sense that it was about to be your time? How did you go into this round of querying? Like, how are things different? Because I feel like sometimes there's like a quiver before it happens. Like, I don't know.
It's so funny that you say that because that's exactly what I felt. I had queried previously. I like to tell people about this because it's kind of funny, but I queried the first time when I was 16 in high school and only got rejections as I should have. It was not ready. I'd done a ton of research, but the book itself just was not ready. And that really discouraged me for a while. And I just dedicated myself to learning more, writing more, wrote more books. And then in 2022, I queried another book and only got rejections, and I didn't stick it out for very long. So basically, right after getting those initial rejections, I wrote another book, and that book just flowed so fast. I think I wrote it in like a month and a half. I just got this sense that this book was different, and I put off querying for a while. You know, I did all the editing, did the beta readers, did all that. And then I started getting it ready for querying in 2023. But it took me a long time to get my query ready. I mean, lots of meetings with Jessica. I even met with a few other agents. And I really like to say I spent probably as much time on my submission materials as I did getting the book ready because I knew how important those materials were. But yeah, I started querying for that book last year in the fall. I think I started in early August. And I did. I just had this sense that things were going to be different this time. I was going in with a completely different mentality, thinking this is a journey. I was not as afraid of the rejections this time because I knew I had lots of opportunities, because you still have a long list, even if you get a rejection from one person. I think I started to look at it more as just not quite finding the right person yet. So it was just a whole mentality shift for me. And I really felt like this was my time. So in my first round, I only sent to maybe like 8 or 10 people. And I got a full request in that round. And then about a month later in October, I sent another round and I queried Ellen. And by chance, within 5 minutes of me sending my query, she reached back out to me. And
what?
Yeah,
wow.
It was amazing. And that's kind of been one of the amazing things about her. Her communication is unparalleled. You send her a message, and while it's not to be expected that you get a response fast, with her, you typically get a response within a day, if not hours. She's really unbelievable with her communication. And Caitlin and I, my sister and I, who work together a lot in the submission process, she helps a lot with my mentality and just keeping going during this process, which everyone knows can be very difficult. We were sitting together on the couch sending out queries, and she saw my inbox get a response, and she was thinking, oh, is this already a rejection? And she looked at me and said, you have another full request. And sure enough, Ellen read it very quickly on her vacation, I might add, and immediately spoke to me about my comps and was very excited about those. And she knew those very well and even told me another book that she thought it sounded similar to. So I immediately kind of felt her interest, and things just moved very quickly from there. I definitely had a sense of this is different this time, both my own mentality and just feeling like this book had something a little bit special.
Ellen, how in the world do you have response times that fast? Like, please tell me where you get your coffee.
Yeah, right? Constant coffee all day long. Usually work does keep me busy enough that I wish I could respond to every query with even just a, you know, this isn't quite for me, or this is interesting, but the pages aren't for me. But I do have the luxury of jumping on a query when I see one that I really, really love. And I know in this business, especially with agents, something that, you know, has a great pitch. And if the first few pages are really good, I'm not going to be the only one. And so speed does factor in a bit. And so when I see something that I really, really like, I'm going to go ahead and request. I was on a trip, so I had extra reading time. So there was a little bit of kismet with just having time right at that moment to dive in, which helps. A lot of this industry is good timing too. You know, some of it's a great query. Some of it's obviously a really stellar manuscript from a great writer like Julia. And then some of it is just, did I have time at that very specific moment to jump in? And I did, luckily. And yeah, and I think too, when the first few pages, and then as you start to read, clearly match kind of the energy and the polished way the query is written. When it matches the query, then I know that it's a pretty good project. And the writer has successfully summarized the book and the query too at that point. So
let's talk about one of the things that you point out that you liked in Julia's work, because I agree with you and I've been trying different ways of saying it, but finding a query where it is person first versus world first, I've been thinking about a lot lately. Can you both talk about that?
Sure. You know, with fantasy and world building, obviously that part is so very, very fun and so cool and a huge part of speculative fiction. And a lot of times we get so immersed in that that we forget who is the protagonist and their personal stakes in the world and how those stakes connect to kind of the magic and the world building. And so it was very clear in Julia's query early on that, you know, this was a cool world, of course, that we're set into, and we're going to get to know it a lot better in the pages. But even if you took away the magic and the fantasy, I could tell that the character, Ro, the main character, still would come off the page and her motivations would be clear, even if you dropped her into another type of fantasy setting. Her motivations and stakes were very clear and connected to the world, but also not dependent on the magic carrying her story.
You know how there's the Bechdel test? I want to make the Goff test. It is named after you. Does your fantasy pitch pass the Goff test? If you take away the world and you take away the magic, is it still a story?
I like that. Yes. Yeah. And no matter what happens plot-wise too, the character's motivations and their personal kind of goals and what they achieve and how they go from point A to point B is ultimately what carries a story anyway. And the magic in the world building won't be able to stand alone if you don't have that element. So that's why I look for that. And Julia's query had that so clearly with Ro.
Yeah. And I think for me, it was when I was initially coming up with the concept of the story, while the magic and the fantasy cruise ship were really important to me, it was also just really important to me to develop Ro's family, because that's a big thread throughout the book. And I think that's why it was so clear to me that she really needed to be the focus and the query, because where she comes from and what's motivating her has as much to do with the story as kind of the magical elements do. So, and it's always, for me as a fantasy reader, I love fantasy, but what really keeps me going is the characters and feeling connected to them in the world that they live in. So it was really important to me early on to make sure that people, even from reading the first paragraph of the query, felt connected to Ro and her motivations, as well as why she felt the need to go on the journey that she does.
I think this is such an interesting conversation, because we hear all the time on like MSWL Day or MSWL Wishlist, like, they said they wanted it. Like, they said they wanted it. It was a perfect match. And then they rejected it, you know? And I think this is exactly one of the fixes, right? Is it grounded enough in character, in wants, in stakes, so that, you know, you can push forward. And so you had all that stuff, Julia. You've done all the work. You have this amazing, very fast process. I want to hear about the call. Like, how did that go? Like, how did you guys know this worked for each of you? Like, tell us everything.
Yeah. And I think saying it's a fast process is also me misrepresenting it a little bit, because the initial call was actually in late October. She read it very quickly, but it was for a revise and resubmit. So that initial call, I think, was where I was getting to know Ellen. She told me a lot about her agency and about herself as an agent, and then talked to me about kind of her edits that she saw for the project. And in true Ellen fashion, she took a good hour and a half with me. And that was, I had no clue. I had told my sister that I was going to have this meeting, and I was like, it might be like 30 minutes. And then, you know, she spent all that time, and not just telling me about the edits. I think that was something that immediately drew me to her as well, was she talked about her agency. She talked about her own editorial style and that she's a very editorial agent. And she also told me what she loved about the book and particular scenes she loved about the book and particular characters. And that really stood out to me and kept me excited for the revisions. And I think what, you know, my honest reaction was a little bit of fear, a little bit of, you know, not knowing what a revise and resubmit would become, because I didn't know if it would eventually result in an offer. And I didn't know if I could deliver on the edits. But I think what really appealed to me was that I also agreed with the edits. And I think that they were things that I'd already been kind of wondering myself. They were things that really were at the core of what I thought the book should be. So I think that's a really important thing when you go into a revise and resubmit, to make sure that you really connect with the edits and also think it will make your book better. It got to a point where I didn't want to send out my previous version of the draft. I was wanting to keep sending out this new version. So that first call was for that revise and resubmit and just to get to know each other, I think.
Well, and I love that too, because so many authors think agents give a revise and resubmit and it means nothing. They're like, why are agents giving me more homework for no reason? But of course it's for a reason. I don't want to pry too much, but like, can you talk a little bit about your thoughts on a revise and resubmit versus offering right away, and like how it's not just a way to waste writer's time?
Yeah, sure. The revise and resubmit, it's interesting. So much of our job as an agent, especially in recent years, even since I started many years ago, I've seen the shift. You know, we're becoming more editorial. We try to do a lot of that heavy lifting and like that early work so that when it comes time to pitch to editors on our end, we can present them with a pretty polished product that they don't have to kind of look at and think, oh, this could be good, but there's such a huge edit to do. We want to try and, you know, alleviate some of that maybe resistance if an editor sees something they love, but they're not sure about the editorial commitment they can make. So agents are doing a lot more editorial work. It's something I like to do. I enjoy editing. So I'm not unhappy to see the industry moving that way. So a lot of times when agents, especially me, when I'm offering a revise and resubmit or editorial comments, I'm trying to gauge, you know, one, does the author agree with the changes? Because that's the most important thing. I don't want to take an author on and then change the book into something that they're not comfortable with, or if it's not the story that they're envisioning. You know, I have clear editorial ideas of how to make a book, you know, flow better and read better. But a lot of my edits do concern how a book will be better in the marketplace too, you know, and how it might better appeal to editors who have to offer money to buy the book eventually. So part of it is that kind of marketing thought process too. So I am coming at it from that angle as well. So the book will always change under an agent's hands, and then it will further change in an editor's hands. So I always try to gauge early on, okay, does the author like what I'm suggesting? Is it something they've already been thinking about? And then the other half of that is the kind of follow through portion where, you know, I can suggest all of these wonderful things and the author can be on board. But if they struggle to kind of implement those, or when they sit down to put pen to paper and they realize that this editorial kind of communication is not conducive to them making the manuscript better, then that tells me, okay, then, you know, we might not be a good fit, or there might be an agent out there who could better communicate how to improve the manuscript. So I'm kind of looking for those two things early on. And no manuscript really nails it the first time. I almost always hop on a call with a potential new client to talk about edits, always. There's always that early kind of editorial, you know, test to see if they like the ideas. And I think that's a good indicator of a project that I like or that jumps out at me, like Julia's, is if I can envision the edits too. I can read a manuscript that's good that I think needs work, but if I can't kind of formulate how I would tell the author how they could make it better, then, you know, it might not be the best project in my hands. But with Julia's, it was very clear how I could ask her to tweak and twist to make it even, you know, go from A to A plus.
You actually said something really interesting there, which is that we could have the same project. We could have three agents look at it, see the same issue in it, and describe the same issue three different ways. Mm-hmm. We could also have one agent describing that project to three different authors, and those three different authors would interpret those words in three different ways. So you're right, it absolutely has to be a fit in that way.
And actually, so Julia, how did that editorial, like, how did it feel for you? Did you have any non-negotiables you didn't want to fix? Or were you guys totally in line?
Yeah, I would say I usually am pretty open to edits and feedback. I just like hearing them. And with Ellen, there were no non-negotiables for me. Like, she didn't bring anything up that I put my foot down and said, no, I don't want to change that. Everything she said, because I think we were aligned in the way that we thought about this book, I also agreed. And they were things that I had been either wondering about myself or things I hadn't thought of, but I was so excited about implementing. While they did take time to implement, and maybe when I first agreed to them, I didn't realize how much time it would take. They weren't huge things. They were almost, like she was saying, kind of tweaking and twisting and like elevating in a way. It wasn't like I had to invent a whole new like plot line or something like that. It was very much kind of just enhancing what was already there. So I think it just came really naturally to me. But I will say, you know, after getting them, I looked at my list because she's awesome and sends me a list after what we talked about. And I was a little overwhelmed. I was thinking, how am I going to do this? I originally told her, I think, oh, I can get this done in 2 weeks maybe. But then with the holidays coming up, because this was in November, it was my last full semester in grad school, and holidays, my birthday was also at the end of the month. So it was a lot happening at once. So I think it did take me a good 3.5 weeks, I would say, or almost the month, to finish the edits to where I was happy with them. But it really clicked for me. And I felt like it was a pretty natural process. There were, of course, moments where I was just self-doubting, I think, where I was wondering if she would see the changes I'd made. And there were many times I'd talk to my sister and say, do you think this is good? You know, because of course she reread the whole thing before I sent it back to Ellen, and I did as well. But she was very excited by the changes. And I think Caitlin told me, you know, this is the best it's been. Definitely send it back.
It's so interesting. It's kind of like when you see your friend that's a designer or whatever, and you walk in, you think your outfit looks good, and she looks at you and you can see her looking at your shoes or whatever. But it's so emotional and raw to take something that you created, to hand it over, and to actually have to incorporate someone else's vision can be really difficult. So it took you 3.5 months. Do you have any tips of how did you do the easiest stuff first? Did you do the hardest stuff first? Did you do it in chronological order? What was that process for you?
And if you did it again, would it be different?
Yeah. So it was in that month of November that I did the edits. And I think towards the beginning, I had thought I would make the biggest change first, and I would not work in chronological order. I would make the biggest change, which had to do with a character arc, or it was more with the romance arc. And I think I had thought I'll go do that first, and then I'll go back and do kind of the smaller things and the enhancements. I found out quickly I needed to work chronologically, and that was a pretty quick shift for me. I had to go back and sort of work from the beginning because I realized how much of these changes were, even though they were smaller, were enhancements, they were layered throughout the entire book. So it was really important for me to start from page one and go through and see where I needed to implement the changes. I don't think I would do it differently. In fact, the only thing I would probably do differently is just work from chronologically from the beginning. And that's how I've usually done edits and revisions. I'm not sure why I thought this was the time to change that up, but I think I would just go chronologically. And I think you have the sense of maybe you can speed up the process if you work in pieces, but I think it really takes the time that it needs. And I tend to be a fast drafter when I'm excited. I can be a fast editor when I am excited about the changes. And I think that was the fastest I could do it and make sure that it was effective. Because that's the thing, you can implement edits super fast, but if they're not effective, then it doesn't matter how quickly you can do it. I think any advice I would give would probably just be to make sure you're excited about the revisions. Because if you're not, you're going to be kind of forcing it. And that's not going to be something that you want to read or your agent, potential agent, wants to read. So I think making sure you agree and just making sure you're flexible with working with an agent and working with an editor, you are not on your own anymore. You are going to have to listen to other feedback and really work as part of a team. And I think the sooner you can kind of shift your mindset, the better.
Well, it's interesting because what you're being asked to do is see things in your work. It's like therapy, right? So you're seeing things in your work, and all of a sudden, once you understand that other thing, it does radiate every which way. It changes everything. That one thing might change how they are reacting to another character. That one thing might change their anger levels. That one thing might change their self-soothing. You know, like, so it's not just switching a scene, it's enhancing a character so that that character is more multidimensional, which makes you have to be more multidimensional. It's really complicated and interesting and frightening.
Well, it's almost like you have to be in a certain place in your own life to be able to illustrate all of those details in your character's psyche. Yeah, I find that when people try to rush edits, it actually takes longer, long term. Julia, I think it's so cool that your sister is there to check everything with you. If you could be a time traveler and give a message to your sister now that she would give you at the hardest part of your writing journey, what would that be?
Well, the thing I always say about Caitlin is she believes in me when I don't. So when I'm at my lowest point, and believe me, there were many of those points. I mean, I'm definitely sharing the highlight reel of my journey, but I've been doing this since high school, and I've been fully dedicated to this since high school. And even I had a friend reach out to me from middle school when I announced getting an agent, telling me that she remembered me writing a book in middle school. So this has been, so nice. It was beautiful. Everyone around me knows this has been a huge part of my life. So she has seen me want this for so long, and therefore even not get it for so long simply because I would be afraid to try at certain points. So I think for Caitlin, it's been, I don't know that she would even be able to sum it up in one phrase, but she's just there for every moment. She even wrote me a letter before going on the submission process that was, when you need to remember why you love this book, because she'd written, you know, multiple letters to me about why she loved it. And so I think it's just been this unwavering support that she's given me. And even when she's frustrated with the process and querying and, you know, the amount of times I've asked her, are you sure this is good? She's always there to tell me, you are going to get there. And I think actually, if I could say one thing that she's told me consistently throughout the process is, I know it's going to happen. That's what she would tell me. I know it's coming. Even though you don't, I know it. So that like really kept me going because there were times I didn't know it was ever coming.
That's so nice.
Ellen, everyone should have a Caitlin.
I know.
Yes.
Right. Ellen, tell us, what traits do you look for in a client?
Yeah, that's a great question because everyone, I mean, authors are so different and they write their books so differently that a lot of my clients have similar traits and then they're vastly different too. But I think one of the first key traits is what we've discussed already is that kind of openness to editing. And because as Julia said, a lot of it is, you know, I'll do an edit to make sure the manuscript is ready to go. A couple edits, a line edit usually too. And that's partly to get the book ready, but then also to kind of prep the author. You know, can this author work with commentary that might be hard to hear sometimes? Because as much editing as I do, and Julia knows that we did a lot just to like get it really perfect, the editor comes in at a point when they buy the book and they're going to be the head editor there. You know, that's actually their job. There's going to be a lot more editing. And so I always look for a client that's kind of willing to edit, gets energized by wanting to make the book better, because especially as a debut author, so much of that kind of process is learning to work with a team and editing as a team and embracing that excitement of, okay, this was just a manuscript that's, you know, very special on your desk, on your computer that you've loved forever. And now it's going to be something different. Now it's not just a personal project, but it is something that a team is wanting to share with the world and to put on shelves. And so part of that is a little bit scary. So it's great to find authors who are excited by that, kind of excited to let go a little bit, actually, and to share their work with others. So I look for that. And these days, because, you know, we're an agency that prioritizes our author relationships, we want to stick around with our authors and hopefully we're their agents for a long time, no matter what they write. So we don't just represent by project. So I always ask potential clients, you know, what else are you working on? Where do you see yourself? You know, do you want to go from YA to middle grade? Do you want to go from YA to adult? I have those conversations early on. And so I find myself drawn to folks who do have interest in other possible genres like fantasy or contemporary, but then also different age group audiences. So writers who might want to write middle grade one day, or YA writers who see the benefit of being flexible to work in YA crossover, possibly. And luckily, I'm an agent that likes to read in a lot of different areas. So that gives me the ability to look for those clients. Some agents just stick in one area, and that's great too. Like they just do YA and that's what they're really excellent at. But I always look for the writers who have a lot of different interests, because I do as well. So when I find somebody who matches with that, it's a good fit usually.
I was thinking about, Julia, how you said this is the highlight reel. And we say that about people on Instagram. And we say that about, like, you know, writers who seem to have overnight success, never mind that they've been working on it for 20 years. I guess I'm wondering what the opposite of that is. And if there could be like a motivational, almost 80s training montage for writers, like we never see the hard part, right? And I guess I just wish there was a way that we could convey the, like, it's okay if this is hard.
Are you talking like a Rocky running up the stairs kind of like?
I am.
Yeah. Yes, please.
Well, yeah, you know, there's always that sequence in the movie. Well, not always, but there's a character who's like, you know, trying things, falling back down, trying things. It's not working. I love that. And I wish there was just like a writer version of that with, you know, the music like that too. We only get to see the good part, which I understand. But I wish there was a way to just meet writers where they are in terms of it being difficult and it can still work out.
I think the writer's montage would just be a chair, like put your butt in the chair, put the butt in, your butt in the chair, like over and over and over. Get more coffee, put your butt in the chair, get more coffee, get the tissues. I don't know. Julie, what do you think it would be? That's mine. Tissues, coffee, bourbon, chair.
I would like to add tears. crying.
Writer's tears.
Yes. I also think I like to say, like, this was the fourth book I wrote, third book I queried, fourth book I've written. I just think it's not overnight. And there were, I hate to say this because it sounds negative and I don't mean it this way because I love writing and I love the whole journey, but there were definitely more like tears and frustration and down moments, I think, than even the upper ones that came later. So I think if you're feeling like you're watching all these people get success around you and that can never be you, that was me. I also thought it would never be me. I like to say that my first pull request ever came in September. So
that was however many years I've been working on this, of never having one and thinking that it would never happen for me. So I think just to keep going, the highlight reel is definitely not the norm, I would say. And you just have to always go back to the love of writing. And I think that's what gave me the most joy, was writing the book. All that other stuff around it, that's the business part. And that part you do have to navigate and love too. But it's the writing that keeps you coming back no matter how hard it gets.
So if we have the Goff test of, does your fantasy query stand up without the fantasy? We can have the Alexandra test of, do you love writing your book more than you love the idea of, I guess, movie red carpet premiere?
Absolutely. I always say that. I love writing more than any success it will bring me, you know? That. So I think for sure that's the test.
You said you had a feeling this was going to be the book. Tell us more about that, please.
Yeah, I think I just, first of all, drafting it very quickly, that doesn't always happen for me. So the fact that it was just flowing so easily, that was something that told me this book felt special. I've written other books that I truly love, but this one I felt like had more of a hook. It had something that I thought would make it stand out a little bit, both the character journey as well as the setting. So I thought that that would make it stand out a little bit more. And then I really have to say, I think it was just my mental state going in was just different. And I think, I know that that doesn't have anything to do with what actually happens, because that's not a part you can control. But I know that for me, I went in thinking more positively, thinking that this was going to happen. I started changing my ifs to whens. I was like, I would always say when I'm going to get an agent, or when I'm going to, you know, get the next step. And I think that that kept me going a little bit more. I remember the first time I ever got a rejection, it felt horrible. And I know I was crying. I know I felt bad the rest of the day. This time when I got my first rejection in the process, Caitlin and I just laughed, because, you know, we were like, it came 24 hours after I sent it. And we were just like, you know what, that's okay. And so that was a big shift where we were like, okay, we're in it. And we're going to see it through this time, because I stopped early with my other querying project. This time I was like, I don't care if it takes 60, I don't care if it takes 100, I'm going to stick it out. So,
well, I think if you're listening at home, I think what you see here is you went from a dabbler to a professional. The reason that it worked is because you sat down and you had struggled through all those other scenes and all those other pages. And the reason your attitude was different is because you put yourself through the process. I mean, it's such an important thing. And I think occasionally does happen where someone's like, oh, I'm just gonna write this book and I'm gonna get an agent. And like, you hear those stories, but for the most part, it is all the things you need to learn in this process. It's so much, right? And once you do it and you walk through it and you walk through it and you, it's like your first 5K versus your 10th, right? It's practice, it's muscle memory. It's so interesting. And I think it sounds like, Ellen, you're looking for professional writers that are in this for the long haul. Tell us how you work that way.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's a lot of times a numbers game. And so once writers kind of reach that third or fourth or fifth manuscript, you know, maybe it's querying, maybe they've worked with an agent. At some point, you reach a moment where the rejection doesn't hurt as much, or it's like, you've done this so often now, it's a side career. And so you've just gotten good at it. And I find that a lot of my clients, their debut actually ends up being what is their fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh type of project, because they finally like nailed how to pitch it, how to detach a little bit enough just to let it go and let room for edits, you know, flow in. And so I think there is a sweet spot there, like Julia was talking about. And even with clients that I have, you know, they have several projects now, it becomes easier to edit with them and they've gotten into the groove of their own editing style and how it works. So like they just keep improving. And then that's always fun to see, because that's about when they've started to nail one area, that's when they start to explore other areas and like explore how to mix up their own writing, which is always fun to see. And so I love it when a YA client is suddenly like, oh, I've written this middle grade, I would love to explore this area. So I think, yeah, what Julia was saying is definitely right. There's that sweet spot of still caring so passionately about the writing, but you do the writing because it's fun. And even if you finished a project and it never went anywhere, you would immediately start on the next one because you just can't resist. And at some point, just the time that you put in ends up being the reward.
I've heard people say, and people in a lot of fields have said this too, whatever it is, go out, get rejected 10 times, and then come back and try again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always tell writers 10 queries is not a lot at all. That's nothing. 50 even isn't a lot. Once you start to reach into the hundreds range, maybe it's time to, you know, look at another project. And especially too, querying is, like I said, kind of a timing game. You know, did you reach the agent right when they're looking for something? And I do like to give the advice that if you're querying a lot and you're not getting any requests, it's usually a matter of the query letter, that there's something there that needs to be fixed. That's not hooking somebody. Now, if your query letter is getting you a lot of requests and your first five pages are, but then you're getting rejections after those partial or full requests, then that's more of a matter of the pages. And so your query is probably fine and doing the work it needs to do. The edit lies in the actual pages of the manuscript. Like, agents are reaching a point where they're not clicking with it. So I always try to give that piece of advice for querying writers who are getting a lot of rejections early on without any requests. It's usually not a pages issue. It's usually a query letter issue. And with just some tweaking, you can amp up the query letter and start getting those requests.
Yeah, I've definitely thought about the horrifying for us possibility of what if there was software that would tell writers where we stopped reading. I mean, nothing good would come of it, but I know that there is enough curiosity there that people wish it existed.
Yeah, that gives me shivers. Ugh.
I know. Nobody likes this idea. Julia, you said you had a feeling that this was going to happen. I didn't realize writers could have that feeling. I have thought of it in terms of, like, when I get something and I know it's going to work out. That is an amazing feeling to me. Ellen, what does that feeling feel like to you? And if you have to pause and think, totally fair.
No, that's a great question. It's usually just a whole mishmash of everything working together at once. So it's, you know, the writing is there and the editorial side is manageable, like we've chatted about. But then also it connects to something specifically that the agent is craving. So I didn't yet have a book that was set on a very closed environment type setting. And I had always loved those. You know, I love books set on boats and around water, but I didn't really have one. So that filled like a very specific niche there for me and got me very excited. And agents can kind of get that feeling when they haven't seen something like that on the marketplace too. So that's what a lot of our excitement comes from, is that realization that, okay, this book is similar enough to other projects that I can comp to other existing titles on the marketplace, but it is unique on its own. And so there's like that very perfect little Venn diagram circle where I can easily convey to editors where I would put it on a bookshelf, but it's also new. And so when I see that in a query and a manuscript, that gives me a good feeling as well. And then also a lot of it has to do with the editorial relationships that I have at that moment in time. That's a huge part of agenting, the relationships that we keep with editors who we're chatting to, who we've had coffee with recently. And so if I can quickly think of editors that I know are looking for a certain type of project that I'm interested in, or that I see a query come through for that I like, if I have that extra little voice in the back of my head that's like, oh, this would be perfect for so-and-so over at this imprint, then I'm even more energized by the query, by the manuscript, because I know I can put a face to a name of somebody who is looking for this exact thing. Like, I can pinpoint to the other folks that are kind of craving this type of manuscript. So all of that kind of works together to give me a really good feeling. But it is a little terrifying for authors. It's also scary for agents, because we do all this with no promise of any type of book deal. You know, that's, we do it all just based on our gut and our good feeling about it. And we hope it sells and it works out. And so a lot of it is a leap of faith on our end too. We're wanting it to work out just as much as the author wants it to work out.
I completely agree with everything you said in terms of all of that. I would also, just to approach this from the other side of the brain, to me, it feels like, and I realize this is a weird combination of things, it feels like perfect afternoon autumn sunshine outside of a coffee shop. It feels like running into a friend you haven't seen forever, just when you're out and about. It feels like when you're in the subway and the train is right there waiting for you and you're in a hurry and you jump in it. And the end of a chapter that just has one of those, like, yeah, stand up and cheer for that hero feelings. So I would say it's like all of that put together is how it feels for me.
That's really beautiful. I love that.
Yeah.
I mean, because as an agent, I mean, you are looking for the unicorn. You're looking for that one thing. And I'm so glad, Ellen, you talked about just like something that's different. I think when I was teaching a lot, I would have throwdown fights over this concept, because students would say, no, I don't care that it's been done before. I'm going to do it again. And it's like, there's no new stories, but like, if you can, as a writer, take your concept and just be like, what if it was on water? what if it was set here? What if it, you know, it was set in Kentucky versus, you know, another Maine coast story, but like places that we don't touch as much. And those twists can make all the difference. And it seems so weird to me that people double down on something that can be, you know, heard before, but you're trying to like give you guys that feeling. Like Jessica, you just want the agent to feel like, you know, the subway door's open. I love it. I think it's genius.
New Yorkers will get that reference.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I think too, it's that feeling of, you know, why did I start in the business in the first place? And it's because agents love to read books. So it gives you that feeling of, oh, this is a book that another, you know, teen or young person would find on the shelf and they would devour it very quickly. I think that special energetic feeling we're talking about often too comes from reading a book and then it going by so quickly, like you watched a movie instead of reading a book. You know, Julia's manuscript was fairly long. Perfect word count for its genre and like age range. But still, that book flew by though. I did not know that I had read that many pages by the time I had finished with it.
Yeah, it's like when you find a book you're really excited about, but like times 10 because you get to talk to the author and read it a bunch more times.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's for young adult or middle grade or picture book, ideally you'd feel like you're that age again when you're reading it.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Now that you both have experience in the industry, you have success. Like, what are the things you would tell the authors out there who are waiting for that feeling that this book is the one?
I would say that, first of all, just keep writing. Like, I know that that sounds cheesy and you probably don't want to hear that as the number one advice, but it really is. It's kind of like we were talking about, you get better and better with every book you write and you gain that experience. And I know for me, every book I wrote was better than the one before it. And so I think that that's just an important piece, is to keep writing. I also think educating yourself as much as possible about the industry is really important. So the minute you finish your book, you don't want to race out and write a query. You want to really research how to write that query, try to look for successful ones, go get feedback on it, really work on your submission materials almost as much as you worked on your book, because ultimately that's what is going to get an agent's attention. So I think that that's a piece that I think is so important, and something that I was wanting to do even in high school was reading that guide to literary agent, reading Query Shark. You know, I did all those things because it was so important to me to really study the industry, because I knew I wanted to do traditional publishing. So I think if that's your goal, really make sure that you understand the business as much as possible. And then I think my last piece of advice too is, when you do get to that point that you are querying agents and maybe you do have a full request or maybe you do have a call lined up, really make sure you know what you want in an agent. Because I think it is tempting to think, oh, I finally got this, I'm just going to go with whoever, you know, the first person is. But I listened to one of your podcasts recently, one of the Manuscript Academy podcasts, where they were talking about green flags in an agent. And I think for me, Ellen had all of them. It was communication. She validated my concerns. I talked to all her clients and they only had amazing reviews. She's so knowledgeable and willing to share that knowledge. And the editorial piece was really important for me. So it's like, make sure that you really connect with that person, because they are going to be your partner and there is going to be a lot of ups and there's going to be a lot of downs. And you want to make sure that you're really connected with that person on a business level. So those are kind of my tips.
Yeah. Like Julia said, read widely. So much of how you frame a query letter has to do with what's currently on the marketplace and happening. And especially with YA and middle grade, which have clear sections on shelves. So read widely in the area that you're writing in. And if you're writing in that area, you should want to read those books too. I think that's a good sign that you're writing in the correct age group. You know, are you energized and excited about reading YA? Then, you know, you're going to probably write very energetic and captivating YA. And then, as we mentioned before, readers like the familiar and they like to dive into stories where they can look to certain entry points as guideposts. So it's never a bad idea to go with a concept that maybe has been done before, but the key is finding that new way in, that like one thing that makes it slightly different. Why are you telling the story? And usually that special little factor that changes it up is a factor that comes from the personal. So not just, oh, I'm going to take this familiar story and set it in a new place, but how is that new place personal to you? Or what personal element of your life can you attach to a well-known concept or idea? That's what brings that little bit of extra magic. And then I think my last advice is really to diversify your happiness in a sense. Even when you're working on one project and you're querying, maybe, you know, now's the time to look at starting another project. And it doesn't mean you're giving up on the first one. It just means you need to have an outlet while you're waiting, because so much of publishing is waiting and things take years. Even if you've got a book deal, it's going to be years till that book comes out. And so having another project to work on, and even having hobbies and projects unrelated to writing, is very crucial, because reading or crafting or exploring or traveling, those are the things that can help inspire us to add, you know, new fun details to manuscripts. And that's what keeps us as writers grounded. Because in publishing, you know, sometimes I forget that the whole world doesn't revolve around the book. So I think finding those other ways to, you know, channel your energy is great, especially because there are just so many long periods, as Julia knows, in publishing where you're just sitting and waiting, and it can be really daunting if you don't have other outlets or friends or, you know, a support system to do things with.
I just wanted to add to what Ellen said. I wish I'd said that too, because that was so important to me in this journey, was like trying to find joy in other things. Because for so long, I think my whole identity was wrapped up in books and writing books. And I think before this last querying cycle, I always wrote in my letters to myself that I opened throughout the process, like, what else is bringing you joy right now? What else are you excited about that has nothing to do with writing? So I think finding people that maybe know nothing about writing, that you're still friends with, and family that really supports you, if you are lucky enough to have that, as well as just like finding other activities and things that bring you joy, that's so important. Because she's right, you can get wrapped up in thinking the writing world is the only world that exists.
Love that. And I love that you wrote notes to yourself. That's so nice.
So we did go on sub earlier this year, and we have, you know, fortunately found an editor who has purchased the book. Julia's debut will come out in 2026. And we can't yet share who it sold to, but it did sell in a preempt by an editor who was very, very excited about it. So,
oh my gosh. Yay. It's publishing in 2026. Let's put a little time travel Easter egg in here. So if you are listening to this podcast in 2026 and Julia's book is available for purchase, Julia, what is a code word they can email us and we will send them a copy of your book?
Let's go with celestial.
Okay, so if it is 2026 and you email academy@manuscriptwishlist.com with celestial in the subject line, we will send you a copy of Julia Alexandra's book, assuming it's available for pre-order that early in the year. You don't know what the month yet, but yeah. Anyway, so hello 2026, send us an email. I am so happy for you.
Thank you. Amazing. I'm so excited. Everything's happening so fast and it's so wonderful.
Okay. I know, out of everything we've discussed, it's like, oh, this doesn't happen very quickly. And in some rare cases, the stars align and things happen quickly.
Oh my gosh.
Well,
I love
you
it.
Prepare for years for things to happen quickly.
Exactly.
Well, I'm so happy for you both. Just again, so lovely to talk with you. And thank you for providing this, you know, bit of inspiration and hope to the writers out there.
My gosh, thank you guys. This was terrific.
Thank you.
I'm so glad to do it, because I really got a lot of hope listening to the Manuscript Academy podcast, like hearing from the published authors as well as just the agents. Like it made me realize agents are people and editors are people, and that it could be me one day. So I'm glad to do it.
We are so glad that you joined us. And as always, we appreciate your feedback. Just head on over to the iTunes store and let us know what you think. It not only helps us make this podcast be the best it can be, but it also affects our ratings within the iTunes platform.
We'd love to hear from you. If you're feeling brave and want to submit your page for our First Pages podcast, you can send it to academy@manuscriptwishlist.com with First Pages podcast in the subject line. We'd also just love to hear from you.
And if you'd like to learn more about the Manuscript Academy and everything we have to offer,